Welcome one and all to the greatest wrestling show on the planet, as hosted by your wily veterans, Will Macklin and Braden Mayhew, as well as the next generation cohorts, the Beast from BC, Alec Miski, and the man they call Gibby, Zach McGibbon. This is Wrestling with Ideas.
Boy, oh boy, has the world of wrestling been thrown on its head? Well, not really, but there's been some exciting stuff, Zachary, over the last, we'll say, 48 hours of WWE programming.
Man,
we have
a
lot to talk about tonight.
Yes, we do. We've got Shane McMahon coming back. We've got Fastlane.
A whole pay-per-view.
Oh, God. We've got a lot of show to talk about. Plus, we've got a big announcement at the end of the show. We've secured another interview for Wrestling with Ideas. Of course, we had Jake the Snake Roberts earlier. This one is pretty big. So
it's also very large, yes.
It is.
A decently big name in wrestling we've got for you coming up next week. So
also, just a quick shout-out to Isaac Quiroga, who's listening in from Monterrey, Mexico, into this show.
We thank you for listening in, even if you're all the way. You don't need to be listening in Canada to be enjoying this show, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So listening in online.
Anybody who listens into the show, we give a big thanks. So we're going to just kind of go over Fastlane, which is the pay-per-view that happened on Sunday. Zach, did you get to see the pre-show?
I watched the pre-show, yes.
You did. You did watch the pre-show. Okay, so that was where the U.S. title match took place. Now, I missed the pre-show. I had to do some stuff, and I did not quite catch it. Again, I felt that match should have been on the main card anyway.
So you kind of missed it under protest?
We can say that, yeah. Anyway, how was the match, if you were to go over it?
Fantastic.
It should have been on the main show.
On the main show. It was probably one of the best matches on the card, in my opinion.
As far as their series, was it the best match that Kalisto and Del Rio have had together?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it was.
Put it on the pre-show.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
I mean, the two, it's very hit and miss with Kalisto and Del Rio. Sometimes you'll get some beautiful-looking Lucha Libre, and then other times you'll get, you know, your really, really bad wrestling, your botches, which, again, I guess you could say is a standard, as can be seen in Lucha Libre sometimes, but it was a very good match. It was confusing at first because Del Rio hit Kalisto with a chair.
He got disqualified off the get-go
for the first
fall,
but then I realized, oh, that's actually kind of smart, and they build it up.
Because he got the actual, I believe he won with the foot stomp shortly after that. Like, he got the second fall quick.
Yeah, so it was good. Oh, you got the hiccups going.
I had one brief hiccup.
Vince McMahon doesn't like hiccups.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
90-day suspension.
Yeah, he doesn't.
So... we got one of our correspondents laughing at that hiccup there.
There's one little hiccup. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
At least it's not a hiccup in the audio.
That's true. Yes.
But anyways, let's get back to
that. Not a cuss word.
That's
either.
True. Oh, I remember that episode finally. Yes. Go back through the Wrestling with Ideas archives on wrestlingwithideas.podomatic.com.
So Del Rio ended up getting the victory with the double foot stomp. Then they were tied one fall apiece.
Yep.
And then eventually Kalisto did a very similar finish to the Royal Rumble, where he kind of did the counter into the corner. But instead of hitting the Salida del Sol, he actually rolled Del Rio up for the victory. So you would go as far as say this is the best match these two have had against one another without question?
Definitely. I think it was their best match. I think it was better than the Raw match.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a great match.
And it wasn't on the pay-per-view.
Nope.
And I missed it.
Yes, you missed
it. Wow. Well, at least it's for free. I could go back on YouTube and watch it. So I'll definitely be doing that. But I'm glad Kalisto retained. I just like that they're pushing this guy. He's a very talented lucha dude.
Yeah.
And certainly he's a big step up from Mystico. That's for sure. He's adapted to their style better. And he's probably worked in probably the United States a little more than... I would imagine Mystico did before signing anyway. So
yeah,
big things in Kalisto's future. Still teaming up with Sin Cara though, with Unikara, which is
Unikara,
very weird.
Yeah.
So to actually kick off the pay per view, we had Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch taking on the team of Tamina and Naomi, Team Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole storyline is that Sasha has decided that she no longer wants to be a part of Team Bad. She wants to be her own person, and they turned on her as a result of that. I thought this was a pretty surprising way to open the show, having like the women kick things off. And I think with what they were given, they did very good.
It was solid.
It was a solid. It was a, as I like to put it, a fine pay-per-view opener.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it wasn't crazy. I thought it was a standard match. There were some good spots in the match, like I think it was Becky Lynch doing the stunner on.
Yes.
Or rather, that was Naomi on Becky Lynch. Rather, sorry. But that was a pretty insane spot. But other than that, it was pretty standard. There was some good heat on both women, specifically Naomi and Sasha Banks.
The crowd was into it when each girl wanted to kind of tag the partner. Like, yep. They were into the hot tags, which is shows signs of being a pretty good tag match. I mean, compared to other women's matches you've seen over the years on WWE pay-per-view, the crowd was into this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's more than we could say about a lot of women's matches, say, in the last 3 years as well. And the finish, I thought, was good, where they threw on the double submission and got a double tap out for the victory. So, kind of builds up towards the inevitable, I believe, triple threat that they're going to do at WrestleMania for the women's or the Divas title. Sorry. Butterfly belt.
Yeah.
And after that, we were greeted to what I thought was a very, very good match for the Intercontinental title. Kevin Owens taking on Dolph Ziggler for the championship. A lot of good stuff in this match, including Owens just screaming and being Owens. Now, during this match, Owens was noticing that the crowd was cheering for him more, and so he decided to yell, "My hometown, your hometown loves me more than they love you." And I thought this was hilarious, and I tweeted it, and the WWE Universe page actually retweeted me, and I got a bunch of retweets and likes out of it, so thanks to them for that. That was a kind of a highlight to the pay-per-view, but these guys... They went back and forth, and it was a lot of good stuff, like a lot of really cool spots. Like Ziggler hit that corner hard when he got thrown into
it. Oh, it was...
For a second, like, he was selling, as I was able to figure out, but for a second, I was like, oh, did he actually hurt
himself?
Like,
he got whipped in that turnbuckle.
Hard. And a lot of stuff like that, and the neck breakers, and a lot of the... I remember at one point, Ziggler countered, I believe, an apron powerbomb, and... He shot Owens like forward into the ring steps, and KO hit his head so hard off the ring steps. I'm like, ooh, man, that must not have felt good.
It was much more physical than I thought it was going
to
be.
These guys beat each other up pretty bad.
Yeah.
And then the finish came when I believe Ziggler tried to pin Owens off of a Famouser.
Yep.
And then he didn't, and I believe he went for it again, and then KO caught him with the pop-up powerbomb and pinned him for the win. Very good match.
Yep. It was also Ziggler was trying to tune up for his own sweet chin music.
Yes, because he's been doing that often lately.
Yeah.
He's HB Ziggler.
HB Ziggler. Yeah. HBZ.
Yes.
The Heartbreak Ziggler.
The new Heartbreak Kid, except not nearly as successful.
No.
After that, we got a match that surprised me. The six-man tag that I jokingly tweeted would be a barn burner ended up actually being pretty good.
It was fine.
The Wyatts, except for Bray... against Kane, Big Show, and Ryback. A lot of big plundering big men throwing their weight around. But it worked, and what they did was fine. A lot of good action.
It was slow to start.
Very slow to start, but I found it picked up as the match went along.
I think Luke Harper and Ryback have some sort of unique chemistry that they have that I think they should start utilizing more. Because I noticed that more, because there was... Do you remember that run-in that Ryback was involved in, Luke Harper was running down, and there was that weird sequence where it somehow turned into, like, a Somerset... what was it called? Sunset Flip?
It was so weird.
Like, that was weird.
What were they doing? I still don't know
but
that happened.
Whatever it was, it was super smooth, and I'm like, oh, they have some sort of chemistry, I guess.
And they were working each other a lot in this match.
I mean, you know, I think, obviously, you hear me say my boy Ryback a lot. And like, obviously, part of it is a gimmick that I play, but also some of it is, like, I don't think he's that as bad as people make him out to be. I think his character is starting to get stale, and I think what he was trying to do was change up his look a bit, because he knew it was starting to get a bit stale, and of course, you know, it's not going to get over. He's going to get the Goldberg chance. It's hard on him, because he looks like Goldberg, and of course, CM Punk ratted him out.
He's bald, jacked up, and now he's wearing all black, which...
He is a much better wrestler than Goldberg.
I think
Goldberg was pretty underrated.
They are comparable in terms of workers. I don't really think one's overtly better than the other.
Oh, I think Ryback's like...
You really think Ryback is like that much better than
Goldberg
Ryback's
was? Compare Ryback's work to Goldberg's work, and Ryback is much quicker, and the only thing that Goldberg has...
I mean, at least Ryback hits
power.
Flying knees in the corner. He can do that. I don't remember Goldberg ever
Goldberg's
doing
more of an athlete, but I think Ryback's a much better overall wrestler.
Okay, well, that's fair.
So...
So, Even Braun did his parts, and he wasn't overly terrible in this match.
He was green, but he wasn't too green.
He was green, but he wasn't the full tree, we'll say.
Okay. He wasn't Oscar the Grouch green.
It wasn't like, oh my gosh, what is this guy doing in a ring? It was like he would come in, he would do his stuff, he'd beat some people up. They tag out or throw him over the top rope. He wasn't really protected too well in this match. Like Big Show kind of threw him around.
Yep.
It was Strowman who got speared by Big Show on the floor at some point.
Yeah.
Right? So he kind of got beat up a bit in this match.
That was a good spear too by Big Show, I will admit.
It was. Probably Big Show's best spear he's ever done in his career. So yeah, I guess they're not really protecting Braun all that much. Nah, they're fine with taking him off his feet. But they lost.
Because
Ryback ended up doing a very terrible shell shock to Luke Harper. Almost killed him.
Yeah, almost killed Harper.
And pinned him for the win. And I just was sitting there thinking to myself, they're just going to beat the Wyatts like that? Like, what on earth kind of finish is
that
this?
That was...
I don't get it.
Again, coming from a Ryback fan, like a fan of his work, that was ridiculous.
It just like didn't
that,
make
that,
sense.
Like, there's no way that the Wyatts should be losing that easily, especially against a team like Ryback, Big Show, and Kane.
Ryback, Big Show, and Kane.
Yeah.
These are people like who are kind of in the upper mid-card, but they're not like main eventers.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, they feel the need to keep like Big Show and Kane like strong, even though they're at the tail end of their career.
In their minds, because
it's
they're
weird.
Big. In their minds, they're big, so they're considered special attractions.
Okay.
And I think, and I was watching the Stone Cold podcast with Big Show, and he mentioned that too, where he's like, he's a big guy, and like he still draws. You know what I mean? So it's like, and I could see that aspect, but I think he's lying to himself when he says he still draws, because I don't know about any people anymore that says, I want to see Big Show wrestle against this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he's just, when Big Show's on the card, there's like, it's the Big Show match. It's not like anybody asked for it, right? Like,
no.
So, I don't know. I would not have had
You know what's
them
a
win.
Match they should book at WrestleMania? Roman Reigns versus Big Show, part 63.
Well, I mean, it's never going to be as over as it was in Chicago at Extreme Rules, so there's that.
Mwah, mwah.
So after that, speaking of Roman, he had an interview with JoJo backstage asking him on if his friendship with Dean Ambrose will ever be the same after the show. And basically, Roman just said, well, nothing will be the same after tonight.
Believe that.
Believe that. Yeah, I'm going to WrestleMania. And that was basically all he really had to say.
Your top babyface.
Great speaker.
I know, right?
Very great speaker. And from there, we went to the Divas title match. Brie Bella challenging Charlotte for the title.
Worst match of the night.
I really
awful.
Think you're giving it way more slack than it deserves. It was fine.
Oh, it was awful, dude.
It was
awful.
Fine.
It was so sloppy. That was some of the worst in-ring wrestling.
I will give you that the finish sucked.
Oh, it was.
The finish made no sense.
All of it sucked. Brie Bella is not a good worker. I'm sorry.
She's not a good worker, but she did fine doing her Brian sympathy spots.
There's one segment in the match where I remember Charlotte had her in a head scissors, and the way she got out of the head scissors was so awkward to try and turn it into a Luthez press. How do you make it so awkward to get into a Luthez press?
I would suppose...
Only Brie Bella could do that. I will give credit where credit is due. Nikki Bella is a good wrestler. Like when she's on and she's with a good worker, she is the John Cena where she can really perform well.
And funny, she's dating him, so
maybe
John Cena teaches wrestling better than Daniel
Bryan.
Yeah,
well, Daniel can't
joking.
Really do too much wrestling.
Yeah, I mean he's pretty well retired. He is retired now.
But Brie was bad.
I really don't think she was all that awful. Like the finish,
she was
sucked.
Pretty bad. The kicks were very awful.
I thought they were fine.
I thought this is an awful match.
Yeah, Zach hated it a lot more than I did. It was fine for where it was. It wasn't like it was put in the death match. People were into it. People were cheering Brie. They were into her offense.
They were cheering Brie because she did the Daniel Bryan yes kicks.
Yeah, but they were really... And when she put in the half crab near the end, people were into that spot. They thought maybe she was going to win the title. You can at least say that they were into the finish. I'm just saying. Like, you could say they were into the match.
No.
And so, okay.
Flair was the highlight of this match.
Well, Flair is always a highlight, though. He's just out there being the weird dad dude who hangs around his daughter all the time.
Woo!
Kind
Woo!
Of an interesting spot for him. But basically, the ending was Brie countered something that Charlotte was going for and locked her into a half crab. And the crowd was going nuts, and I will attest to this because I heard them cheering. And as I guess Charlotte's about to tap out. Brie just suddenly lets go and falls. And then Charlotte, just as if she wasn't even in a submission move at all, locks her in the figure eight, and Brie taps immediately.
Terrible!
And she wasn't even in the submission anywhere near as long as Charlotte was in hers.
Yep.
And she taps. The most awkward,
awful
weird
match.
No transition to the finish. The finish was awful. I will give you that. The finish was terrible.
The entire match was
but
awful.
I don't
but
think
that
the entire
was
match
was just the cherry on top of the ice cream, man.
I think that the finish was bad, but I do not think the match is as terrible as you're making it out to be.
Go rewatch that match.
We can agree to disagree as
that
of this program.
That was awful, man.
But that was that. Yeah, finish sucked. I didn't expect Charlotte to drop the title anyway. She's definitely going to be the champion going into Mania. The bigger match is to come, and that'll be significantly better than this.
Oh, yeah.
So here's to WrestleMania 32 for the Divas.
Hopefully it'll be good.
So we get a little look back on AJ Styles going to WWE and the overall program with Chris Jericho up to this point. And then JoJo talks to Jericho and asks if there's any truth to saying how Styles' one win over him is still messing with his head. And he said, yep. However, he won on SmackDown. And if he wins again, well, AJ means really nothing. And his career ends before it gets started. And that AJ has a bunch of pressure on him tonight to deliver.
Very good.
Which could be very true. And a good point. So we get AJ Jericho 3, and they had a heck of a match.
It was great.
It was a great match.
Probably their best match of the series.
Yeah, the SmackDown one was pretty great, too, I thought.
Problem is that not a lot of people... I mean, people are gradually tuning into it now,
yeah,
because I think Mauro has really... I think Mauro alone just really helps bring SmackDown to a different level.
I'm hearing so much of a brand split. That's a bit of a rumor
going around
after
the big
WrestleMania
news.
I'd be in favor of it. If you're going to call some NXT guys up and you're going to fill the SmackDown roster exclusively with talent.
The problem is, it's just the history with WWE and brand splits is not very good, but you can argue that NXT is its own separate brand,
mm-hmm,
and it's successful, so you can make that argument as well.
Yeah, so if they start just calling some guys up and making SmackDown special with people being exclusive to that show,
yep,
it's got potential. They have the roster depth for that. Believe me, they do.
Oh, yeah. It's just they've got to tap into it, and it'll give more people some jobs in WWE.
And on top of that, bring back another world title.
Like, you know what they could do? Like, they could do, like, if they really wanted to push this brand split, they could do... Remember when they did the Raw pay-per-views and SmackDown mm-hmm pay-per-views? You could do that for the network. You could have your network specials be, like, a special Raw presentation on the network. You know what I mean? If you want to do the brand split, that would be interesting.
So, these guys went back and forth. They did some of their usual stuff. A lot of crazy springboards from Styles, Jericho countering and stuff. I remember at one point, and I think it was near the end of the match, Styles went for a springboard, and Jericho kind of cut him off at the top rope, and Styles fell and basically landed flat on his torso.
Oh, that was a brutal spot.
I was like, oh my goodness, this guy just bumps like crazy.
Styles just kills himself every single time he's out on the ring.
Every time he's in the ring. Jericho pulled out the a perfect lion salt.
Yep.
They just went back and forth and had a nice, nice, nice match.
Very
and
nice.
Again, AJ's a little quicker than Jericho, so at some points he was a little slower and behind on some stuff. But this is the best match for him staying up to pace,
yeah,
I found.
What did you think of Jericho kicking out of the Styles Clash?
I
didn't really mind it, honestly.
I didn't mind it, but I mean, if you're going to kind of have it at a pay-per-view, you think it would be the finish, and it wasn't. So maybe that was why they did it, was to like surprise people.
Yeah.
Because I didn't expect Jericho to kick out. I was like, oh, well, that's...
I think
that's
that just made the match better, honestly.
It is, because then when he kicked out, I was like, there's more?
There's going to be more of this? And then obviously...
And then he went to the calf crusher and made him tap.
Or the calf killer for all you indie fans out there.
Yeah. And made him tap immediately. But great stuff.
Yeah, it was a great match.
Probably the match of the night, I would say.
You know, Fastlane, I'm looking back at the show now, and really, the matches were there.
Match quality was fine.
It's just the story was awful.
And they shouldn't have bumped Del Rio and Kalisto to the pre-show.
And it just made people mad.
I mean, honestly, if you take out this segment we're going to talk about here and the segment that followed it and put all that poopy stuff on the pre-show.
The poopy stuff.
And you put the Del Rio-Kalisto match here, you're looking at a way better pay-per-view all in all.
Yeah.
So what we got was a ridiculous Edge and Christian segment where they did the Cutting Edge Peep Show and they had the New Day as their guests. And they basically just went back and forth with some ridiculous jokes. Then they call out the League of Nations. and make fun of them for a while until Barrett, Sheamus, Del Rio, and Rusev all come out, and they all trade insults, and Del Rio makes fun of Edge for retiring, and he was the one who retired him those 5 years ago and all that. And then Edge said something along the lines of, well, I've done more in the ring in those 5 years I've been retired than you have. That's funny, Dig.
That was a good burn.
I kind of laughed.
That was a good burn.
And then they just kind of goof around for a bit, and Edge and Christian dance behind New Day as they continue making fun of the League of Nations with Francesca too, and that was that. Completely useless, didn't build up anything. I thought for real we were going to get like a new team that was going to get
like
called
an
up
Enzo
here.
And Cass.
Yeah.
Now here's the thing with I want to
disappointing.
But I want to address also this thing. People were saying, you know, oh well, you just let your expectations go to your head, and you wanted this. They shouldn't be getting those sort of different ideas, you know what I mean, in the first place. Because if it's really that predictable, they're not supposed to be given those ideas. The reason why Daniel Bryan was so successful, because people were like, well, it was predictable. It was predictable, but people wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, people wanted Enzo and Cass, not League of Nations. And when they didn't get what they want, they complained. That was because they didn't get their expectations met. And that's been a big factor of WWE throughout the entire year, is just they don't back up any good expectations for themselves. They're just not...
True.
And that's why you see a lot of fans go out and it's like, oh, maybe they'll do this. Maybe they'll swerve everybody. Nope. We're just going to stick to the status quo. And that's not what the fans want right now. And that's why, you know, droves are leaving. Now, of course, the Raw reigns came in today. And they were really, really good, except for that third hour.
For last night's show?
Yeah.
Wow.
4.2 million viewers in the first hour. But
not
here's the thing.
Too shabby.
Here's the thing, though. 3.3 in the third hour. 3.3. Insane. Almost a million people dropped out of the show.
Wow.
In the third hour. That's how much momentum can kill a show. Now, I think, I mentioned this on Twitter, too. If this was a two-hour show, this would be the best show the best Raw show this 2016.
Yeah, so far. And in fact, if Raw was just 2 hours, it would fix so many of the problems that it has.
Yeah.
It's just the show is too long.
That's
the main issue with it.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to watch wrestling for 3 hours every week. That they can do 3 hours for a pay-per-view or a special show once a month,
yeah,
but not on a weekly basis. It's just too much, I find. Like, don't you find sometimes when you're going through these shows, like, you just want to enjoy them, but by the third hour, you're just really forcing yourself to keep watching?
Mm-hmm.
2 hours would eliminate that issue all the time. And yet, here they are, still, like, 4 years later, doing three-hour shows, and it's just too much content.
I also wanted to go back to the Divas title match quickly, because our guy Isaac just tweeted me, I do think the Divas title match is a candidate for one of the worst matches in 2016. The storytelling was okay, but the rest was eh.
Yeah.
So, he just wanted to point that out. So
point we, one given. Get another match, one of those non-advertised matches that means nothing. R-Truth came out to face Curtis Axel, and so Goldust ends up coming out, and he. Basically, he distracts Truth.
Honestly, I didn't care about this that
and
much.
I didn't care about it either. And Axel ended up scoring the upset.
I was more upset about, more than anything, that this got over Kalisto versus Del Rio 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah, it's like you didn't have time for the U.S. title match, but you had time to put the Golden Truth with the Social Outcast on your pay-per-view right after a ridiculous, boring, useless segment.
Ridiculous.
Back-to-back nothing. It was useless. And just took up time before the main event, to which we got the main event, which was the triple threat match, Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose, with the winner going on to WrestleMania to face Triple H for the WWE World Heavyweight title. I thought, very good match.
Yeah, it was good until the finish.
Brock was killing both men. He gave Dean a belly-to-belly on the floor that looked very vicious.
Yeah. Well, Dean has that CZW thing, so he's just going to, you know, kill himself.
He's just going to destroy himself with every bump. And then he was suplexing Reigns like nothing. Shield reunion spots. The Reigns and Ambrose did the double power bomb to Brock twice through two announce tables and then buried him under the second. And then they went at it for a bit. Dean, I believe, hit Dirty Deeds. Reigns kicked out. I think Reigns hit a Superman punch on Ambrose as he went off the top.
Yep.
And Ambrose kicked out. Brock soon reemerged like
Frankenstein
and kept going after both men. And
Brockenstein.
At one point, Dean was taken out, and Reigns got the upper hand, and he speared Brock.
Yep.
But instead of just taking, like, a cover, what Brock did was he immediately leaped out and locked Reigns in the Kimura.
Great spot. And
it was awesome.
Great spot.
And the crowd went nuts.
Yeah.
So at this point, it looks like Reigns is about to tap out, but who should reemerge but Dean Ambrose, and he hits Brock with a chair.
Yep.
And he beats down Brock with a chair. And then he goes over to Reigns and beats Reigns up with the chair. And then he beats on Brock some more until Brock falls out of the ring. And then as soon as Ambrose turns around, what does he do but eat a spear immediately from Roman Reigns, who apparently didn't get hit with that chair at all.
Nope.
Gets pinned, and Reigns goes on to face Triple H like we always knew at WrestleMania 32. Very, very weak finish. Very anticlimactic and just so obvious of who the winner was that it kind of took away. But the actual match itself, that was very good.
Yeah, the match was, to me, it was a combination of the triple threat match between Rollins, Lesnar, and Cena at Royal Rumble in 2015 and the Fatal 4-Way, I think it was Payback, between Orton.
It was like a mix of both of those matches.
Yeah, it was a mix of both of those because we got our Shield spots. Lesnar was out of the ring for a while and let the two others wrestle. It wasn't as good as the Rollins, Cena, and Lesnar match, but it was a solid match. It was still very good. Like, I had a good time watching it, except the finish.
Yeah, well, the finish was really lame.
I really did not understand that finish. I mean, you've got Dean Ambrose killing Brock Lesnar with three chair shots.
Mm-hmm.
So Brock is going to sell those chair shots, but Roman doesn't?
But Roman can just get up and spear the guy and pin him?
They've done such a... Like, it's amazing how they could get other things right, but not Roman right.
And he's the one that they want right the most!
I know! Like, a prime example of this was the Royal Rumble this past year. I thought that Royal Rumble match was well booked. The only thing that wasn't booked
was Reigns.
Was Reigns! The one thing that they needed to book well was Reigns, and they didn't book him well.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we got a lot more to talk about. We have a big Raw show to cover, including the return of Shane McMahon.
Yeah.
So we'll have that for you just after a quick commercial break.
Ottawa! Don't you dare be sour! Put your hands together and clap for your world-famous best wrestling show on the planet! And feel the power!
It's Wrestling with Ideas! Yes, it is!
This show rocks! This show rocks! This show rocks!
Oh, yeah, Ottawa!
Wrestling with Ideas back on CKDJ 107.9. Ottawa's new music.
That deserves a 90-day suspension.
It does. I don't know if I did enough hugging, though.
No.
Do a few more hugs, and then I'll have a 90-day suspension.
And a small fine.
And a small fine. So Raw was last night, and it kicked off with the awarding of the Vincent J. McMahon Legacy of Excellence Award. And so Vince McMahon came out to bestow the award to a person he believed was the perfect winner, who had a great heart, noble work ethic, and it was none other than his daughter, Stephanie. And she came out in tears and was like, well, I didn't expect to win this award, Dad, but I'm so very honored. But I prepared this speech to give if I did win, and they're all in tears, and everybody's booing because they're like, of course Stephanie would win it. But then who should come out but Shane McMahon. Shane O'Mac. In fact, what we heard was, here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talks.
Cha-ching.
Here comes the money. And at that point, my jaw dropped to the floor. I was just like, is Shane actually coming out? He's been gone for years.
Well, I turned my head for a moment, and then I heard the here comes the money, and I turned my head forwards, and I'm like, no way. And I looked, and I saw him doing the whole shtick, you know, coming out, and I was like, oh my God, Shane O'Mac, what?
And in Detroit here, these people went crazy for Shane O'Mac.
It was insane.
They went nuts when he came out. Crazy. So he comes out and he said that it was this award being given to Stephanie that was his reason for coming back. He says, for such a great award that you should earn it. Stephanie has not earned it. And that he was back to basically help right the wrongs that her and Hunter have done as they've been taking over the company. And they talk for a bit, and how Shane was talking about how he helped bail Vince out before, and now he's back to basically reap the rewards of helping Vince out from several years ago.
Yep.
Some sort of lockbox deal they were kind of hinting at.
I think they talked about the lockbox during the Attitude Era.
Did they?
Because I've heard about this lockbox before.
Yeah.
It goes back to the ministry days.
So. Oh, wow. So that's really playing on an old thing there.
I think. I could and be completely making it up.
They are talking about that, and Stephanie's wondering, like, oh, is this true? Does he have a say over you, Dad? And Vince is like, well, it's kind of true. I guess maybe we should talk about this in the back. And they go on and on for a while, and Stephanie ends up leaving at Vince's request to talk to Shane by himself. And they go on, and he's wondering, okay, Shane, like, to get you to stop bothering me, I give you some extra money. What do you want? And Shane says, I don't want money. I want to take control of this show.
I popped.
And I was like, cool. This is interesting. And then Vince basically smiled and said, sure, son, I'll give you what you want as long as you have one match on one night and you win it.
Hmm.
And he said, I'm going to choose that time and place and opponent for you right now. So your match will be at WrestleMania. Your opponent is going to be The Undertaker, and it's going to be inside Hell in a Cell so you don't take your ball and run home with it again.
And you should also mention how the non-PG moment.
Oh, yeah, and Vince cussed and talked about how Shane was going to get
the PG sounder. Let's play the PG sounder on.
I don't even know if that's PG!
Basically, yeah. Vince actually cussed on television. He dropped an F-bomb in front, like, while he was yelling at his son on TV.
It actually made it much better.
Passionate that he said effing beating on the air, which was crazy.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It kind of sounds like somebody who might be talking on this show tonight. but that was crazy. And Shane talked about those beatings like you gave me all those years ago, insinuating that Vince beat him as a kid. That was a little weird. Maybe he did.
Okay.
Apparently, I'm over. Shane's a good actor.
We'll go that angle. All right.
So they do that. Shane agrees and says he's made a deal with the devil before, and the match is on. But Undertaker and Shane McMahon seems like such a weird match.
Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell.
Man.
Very weird.
I actually popped, okay? I'm actually looking forward to this match because it was something different, and
nobody expected it. Nobody could have ever called this match happening.
I'm sure that there's going to be some logic stuff, like, is Shane actually going to wrestle?
That's the thing I'm wondering is, like, is he going to find a delegate to represent him and... And then it's kind of weird because Undertaker is not really a heel, but he's representing Vince, who's the clear heel in this match. And nobody's going to want to see Undertaker lose at WrestleMania, but they don't want to see Vince keep control of the company. They want to see Shane take over because he's the face.
Yeah.
It's got this weird dynamic to it.
Yeah. It's.
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. I'm definitely intrigued. Yeah, where it's going to go.
If Undertaker still had his streak,
oh my goodness.
This would be an insanely amazing match, on story alone.
Because people would be conflicted, because they want to see Shane win and take over from the Authority.
Or but
they
it's don't Taker's streak.
They don't want to see Undertaker lose a streak at the same time, so people would be they wouldn't really know how to react.
And that would be drama filled. You could do the storyline where, obviously, Taker has always been known as like doing what's best for WWE,
mm-hmm.
and you could do some sort of finish, not like, you know, finger poke of doom, obviously, but like something happens with Taker where he realizes that this isn't the way that should happen, and that the next generation of McMahon should be moving on for Raw. And so that could have been an interesting angle. I still think it's interesting on its own.
It still is very interesting because I want to know where it's going to go. Like,
exactly. But imagine how big it was if that streak was still...
If we had to go on a... We're just going to assume that Shane actually works the match and it is him against Undertaker at this point because they're already advertising it. And I mean, if they're already going through to advertise it, they must be kind of gung-ho on the idea.
Yeah.
It's just he hasn't been in a ring in like 7 years. That's been a very, very long time. Like, this Undertaker's been wrestling like a couple times a year.
Yeah.
He can go. Shane hasn't wrestled. Yeah, and Shane hasn't wrestled in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit of a risk.
Well, here's the thing also. Did you notice how much he was sweating after just doing his entrance?
Imagine him
doing a full-length match in a cell.
A full-length match in the cell. But I guess like... All he's going to be doing is just jumping off stuff, and he'll lay there for
a while. He'll jump off the big TV screen.
I can imagine at least a leg drop through a table, and maybe through an elbow drop through one. Then he'll lay there for a bit. And then Taker can really just kind of pick him up and throw him around, I guess. I will
pop if we see a coast-to-coast in the match.
If he can still pull that off, I forgot all about him doing that, to be honest. So if he does that, of course I'm going to pop. Like with a garbage can? Oh, my goodness. If he can pull that stuff off, which is... kind of the stuff I'm imagining in my head for the Cell match. Like,
yeah.
Shane as a spot monkey in the Cell works if he can still pull off the stuff he did like a decade ago.
Oh, yeah.
But can he?
That's the question.
He hasn't wrestled in forever. That's the thing.
I remember looking back into the Kurt Angle and
Great match. King of the Ring. Fantastic match.
People forget, Shane McMahon tried a shooting star press in the match.
And he missed, of course. He can do spots.
He can do spots.
He can be a high flyer. But again, that match itself was like 15 years ago already. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't a
bad looking shooting star press either.
Or no. Well, 13. It's still a while ago.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's over a decade ago that he was doing that.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, can he still do that now? Like, the last match he had was against Randy
Orton. He's not doing shooting star presses at 46 years old.
No. But, like, even just to be able to work at that level, like, the last match he had was against Randy Orton at No Way Out in 2009.
Right.
Which, that was good, but that was still 6-7 years ago now.
Exactly.
So that'll be interesting. It's doing something. We're talking about it, and we are fascinated with where it's going to go. So good on them for that.
And that's what they need. They need the buzz right now because they desperately need the buzz.
Yes, they do. And that kind of kick-jolted more interest in Undertaker. I mean, it's already a vast improvement from Braun Strowman
Undertaker. I will take Shane McMahon over Braun Strowman every single day of the week.
I'll take a gas Shane McMahon who just takes a beating in the Cell and barely does anything over Braun Strowman any day of the week.
Then we got
an awesome six-man. New Day took on Neville and the Lucha Dragons.
Great match.
Great match. These guys just flew all over the place. It killed each other. Big E and his crazy off the apron spears nearly landing on his head.
And he flipped.
Crazy big guy. I mean, he just throws caution to the wind, doesn't he?
Oh, my Lord.
But I love the guy. He's awesome.
He is great, and he's charismatic, and he's a good talker. Why aren't they pushing this guy?
He's got everything. So, of course, naturally, we don't push him because he has everything.
Exactly.
Does it make sense to push a person like that?
It doesn't even make sense because he's the big guy that WWE is looking for.
Yeah, and he can talk, and he can work. Wow. What's keeping this guy from being... I think, like, after they break up, though, he's going to have a huge future.
Oh, absolutely.
After he's done the New Day thing they break off, he's the star of the group.
Or he's teaming up with Ryback and forming the Big Guys.
Nah, Big E on his own. Big E 100% on his own. So after that, Neville leaped from the top and landed on Big E, and then he slingshot Kalisto onto Big E as well. So Big E took like two flying splashes from these little guys after nearly killing himself off a spear. Inside the ring, Sin Cara went for a swanton.
Mm-hmm.
He missed, and Kofi was able to switch his mask around, which is kind of cool. And as Sin Cara was trying to fix his mask, he hit him with Trouble in Paradise for the win. Great match.
Yeah.
Awesome way to follow up the amazing opening segment and keep the ball rolling. Really, really good stuff. So JoJo, just the greatest backstage interviewer in history, talks with Roman Reigns on if he has any updates over Dean Ambrose, who before that, and I can't believe I forgot about this because this was even before the show happened, an amazing backstage little video.
Yeah.
Dean Ambrose pulls up in a vehicle for Raw. And as he gets out to bring his bags and get ready for the show, who should appear but Brock Lesnar? And Brock,
with the flying knee.
Brock just beats the crap out of him in the parking lot, just throws him all over the place.
That's a windshield. Looked like a shoot, brother.
Oh, my gosh. He beat him up so bad.
Oh, man.
And Dean was taken on ambulance, did the whole to the hospital gimmick and all that. So JoJo was asking Roman about that. And he says all he knows is what he's seen in the video. And that Dean is being helped at the hospital, and that's pretty well all he knows. And he's got his mind set on Triple H and the WWE World Heavyweight title. So, and then after that, we've seen that Lesnar and Heyman would be out to address Brock's actions or whatever, just speak.
Best first hour.
So Heyman is going on about just how a little pest named Dean Ambrose swinging a chair ruined Brock Lesnar's WrestleMania dreams. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the Beast is angry. And that the Beast needed to attack the poor little annoying Dean Ambrose. And that is what happened to him.
D-Mark.
And at this point, they are throwing out an open challenge to anybody who is man enough to face Brock Lesnar. The challenge is open for WrestleMania 32. The challenge is open for tonight. Who should come about after that? But we hear sirens and
Scott Steiner came out.
Yeah, we were thinking that, but Dean, I guess, drove the ambulance from the hospital, just stole it and drove it back there. And he comes out. He's half dead. He's crawling to the ring. He's hurt, and Brock just steps on his head and walks right up the entrance strap. Like, you are nothing. I'm not wasting my time with you, you little gnat. And then Dean gets the mic and says, Brock, you're not going anywhere. I want to face you at WrestleMania 32, and I want you in a no-holds-barred street fight. And Brock... Brock turns angrily, runs back at Dean, picks him up, and F5s him on the floor, to which Heyman says, my client gladly accepts your challenge. So it is Dean versus Brock at WrestleMania 32. You were right. You were right, Zach.
I made the correct prediction at the expense of Bray Wyatt.
They switched the plans. I guess during the build-up to the triple threat, they felt that there was so much potential in a Dean-Brock program. They didn't even... They're going to tap the potential with it in the coming weeks.
But oh, yeah. I totally see the... we were mentioning this off the microphone, and we were saying... I could totally see the finish being just like Bret Hart versus Steve Austin.
Oh yeah,
at WrestleMania 13.
He just gets pummeled,
but he won't quit, and that will just put him over as a mega babyface. And Brock Lesnar still looks strong as a heel.
And Brock would probably get the victory, but even though Dean loses,
he doesn't really lose.
Like Brock doesn't pin him or whatever. Yeah. Like the match just gets stopped or whatever.
Like he gets knocked out. Like he just
Or even better, you could have him be in the Kimura. Yeah. And pass out from the Kimura lock.
Yeah.
So it's a submission, but Dean doesn't physically tap, and he doesn't get pinned.
Yeah.
So you can do that, which I think is the way to go.
Yeah, do that.
I get they don't want Brock to lose, but Dean's at a point now where he's on the rise, where like a big clean loss to a F5 isn't really going to do him a lot of favors. So if he's going to lose, you got to do it in some creative way.
Exactly.
But this match is going to be awesome.
I would say you.
Of this card, this is the one I'm looking forward to the most at this point. So, I didn't say that it wouldn't be a bad match. I just didn't think they were going to switch their plans. You know how they are sometimes.
Oh yeah,
it's just they went with the far better program for Brock, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a heck of a street fight.
It's going to be great.
After that, we got heel Dudleys talking up the Usos for a while before their match with the Ascension, and they basically go on about how they're not going to be. Pawns for a piece of furniture, and it's not going to define their career. They're not just going to be a nostalgia act. They're the greatest tag team of all time, and blah, 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 blah. The Ascension attack the Usos while their backs are turned. Again, this match didn't last very long. The Usos end up coming back and winning, and after the match, the Dudleys just kind of go off the ramp, and they kind of have their stare down. Are these guys going to be involved in a tag title match? They have their own program going into WrestleMania. Are they the pre-show match? What do you think this leads to for the big show?
Oh, man, I don't know, because when I saw them tag up, I'm like, why are they doing this? But I still am holding out that there's going to be some sort of heel turn at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be probably in the middle. I think Styles will tell Jericho something like that. He's like, hey, I want to go face Owens for the IC title or something like that. And then Jericho's like, well, I need my 10th one. You know what I mean? I need to get into double digits. And I think we may see Owens versus Jericho versus Styles, which would be a fantastic match, which I would be so looking forward to.
It would be a crazy triple threat.
It'd be awesome.
It would be unbelievable.
Because apparently, I remember, I don't know if they wrestled at a live event, Owens and Jericho. I think they wrestled on a special as well in Madison Square Garden. But I know that when they were touring Australia, that was their main event, Jericho versus Owens.
And they tore the house down?
And they said it was like the best match, not only of the tour, but some of the best matches they had seen.
So, without question, I guess Jericho could do that too. They could throw him in the triple threat.
He's got a story behind it, and like go for that 10th IC title.
And I figure they're going to do Styles and Owens anyway. It seems to be the plan. So why not put Jericho in there?
Why not?
It would be good. And as far as the Usos and the Dudleys are concerned, are they pretty well pre-show fodder at this point? Are they battle royal material? Where do they end up? Like, this looks like a program of some sort, but it's not going to have any significant spot on the WrestleMania card.
I just see Andre the Giant battle royal
for all of them, eh?
Yeah, I think what they're going to do is they're going to try and hype up Ryback as one of the
favorites.
Like, they'll hype up Ryback, Strowman. Maybe a couple others. Maybe if they really cared, maybe they would try and renew some interest in Tyler Breeze and make him.
That's not happening.
It ain't happening. Well, they've got to try and build up some people. You know what I mean? So I could see them trying to build up some guys that they usually don't build up to try and win the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. But I still think it's going to be Strowman winning the Royal.
Yeah,
I don't see it anywhere else.
So speaking of Jericho and Styles, Jericho comes out to basically literally put AJ Styles over. His whole reason for being out there. Mm-hmm. He's talking about how I didn't respect you, but now I do, and you've really proven that you belong here in the WWE. Called him out, they shook hands, celebrated kind of, and then the Social Outcasts come out for their weekly segment.
Yeah.
And they talk about how it's ridiculous to see these two hug and celebrate and how the spotlight should be on them. And Bo was hilarious. He was like,
Bo's been stepping it up recently.
It was so lovely to see such love in the ring with those hugs. And then Heath, who was making fun of it, was like, I was being sarcastic. And then Bo was like, oh, me too. I don't know. I laughed. I thought it was hilarious.
I think
he's
Bo's
funny.
Been getting,
he's goofy.
Bo's been getting much better.
Very funny. He's a funny guy.
He had his moments where I really liked him, and then moments where I was like, eh. Mm-hmm. But now he's starting to get that stride back, I think, and being a bit more consistent.
I think him being in a stable kind of helps too.
Because you can stand out from other guys, especially guys like Curtis Axel.
Yeah, and like Adam Rose isn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, the Heath and Bo do most of the talking for that group.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they had their match, and Jericho and AJ won. They beat Slater and Axel, and that was that. And as if anybody expected any kind of other outcome. After that, we got a few backstage segments, Stephanie and Triple H talking about the upcoming title match that Hunter will be having at WrestleMania 32. And then we got to see an update on the Golden Truth, because that just needs to be updated.
Absolutely.
They just need to keep drinking this into the ground. Are they ever going to become a tag team at this point? I'll never know. Mm. But R-Truth was angry that Goldust cost him his match and how he thinks bringing him a cake is going to help everything. It doesn't.
Cake sells everything.
And Goldust had the cake smashed. I believe he smashed it in his face, actually. Truth just pushed it back at him.
Yeah.
Very rude. I mean, the guy gave you a cake. Mm-hmm. And you're smushing it in the poor man's face. And not being his tag team partner.
Come on, Truth.
Goldust was very upset. And then the Wyatts had a rematch against Ryback, Kane, and Big Show.
50-50 booking.
50-50 booking, and that's all I'm going to say about this match. Literally the only thing to say about it. Oh, and then Ryback ditched. He left his partners high and dry. Which, is that a heel turn? Is he heel? Or is he just doing it to separate himself? And it's like a Rollins thing where Rollins walked out on the Shield, but he wasn't really a heel during the Shield's face when he was just frustrated.
Yeah,
what is this?
That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking.
He didn't come off as a heel in the post-match.
No, I think he's just like, you know what? I'm tired of being a tag guy. I need to move on to my singles career, which is understandable,
it's,
I guess.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think, you know, honestly, I don't really care. I'm a Ryback fan, but...
Yeah, whatever.
I don't really care.
Right? Yeah. So that was that. And then Sasha and Naomi had a match, and Sasha won. And it was decent. Didn't last too long.
Yeah.
But still, they're putting over the women that are going to be competing for the Divas title, and the more focus on them, the better.
Absolutely.
And
Charlotte came out after this match,
I'm
not correct.
She did, to basically make fun of both
of
her opponents.
You know, people were like, oh, she shouldn't yell and all this stuff. But honestly, I think she's doing a good work as a heel. She's a good heel.
It's certainly better than her as a babyface, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like anything better than Charlotte as a babyface at this point.
Oh, without question.
And people are like, oh, why is she doing that? And I think, you know what? And I want to give a shout-out to the Wrestling Life podcast who pointed this out. Charlotte is really the only true essential heel where everybody dislikes her, but she's not bad, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she's... like, people don't like her. They want to see her get beat up, if that's what I... that. And that's the mark of a good heel. You know what I mean? Because they're not doubting that she's a bad in-ring wrestler, because she's not a bad in-ring wrestler at all. I mean, you know, people are like, well, her promos need to get better and all that stuff. It's like, you know what? Not all heels are all about entertaining. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's about... some heels are all about themselves, and you want to see them get beat up, and that's what...
And that's Charlotte in a nutshell.
And Charlotte is... and that's what makes Charlotte a good heel. And you know what? I'm fine with it.
I'm fine with it.
Too, not every heel has to be the entertaining, funny, comedy heel. Like, Owens is a great heel in his own respective right, right?
And he's one of a kind. No,
like, he is a one of a kind heel. Like, he takes his heel to the next level. But the thing is, people love him. Love his heel work. You know what I mean?
They do love him.
Like, they cheer him. When Charlotte comes out, rarely do I ever hear about, you know, Charlotte getting cheered. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not because she's a bad wrestler or anything like that. And when I talk to people you know, in the wrestling circles and all that. They say she's a good wrestler. You know what I mean? It's, they're not taking that away. So, you know, I think she's just unique in her own right, to be able to pull off this heel gimmick. So I think that's just what makes her different from the crowd.
It certainly does, and I'm very interested to see where the Divas how they're going to build it up from now until WrestleMania. I'm kind of excited about that, to be honest, which is far cry from other years going into the big event for the ladies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then lastly, we had the main event after the announcement of the Godfather going into the WWE Hall of Fame. Very well deserved for the Godfather and Papa Shango, if anybody remembers that.
Papa Shango.
We got the main event, which is Roman Reigns against Sheamus, and I was not very into this match. I just, it was very much paint by the numbers. Every match you've ever seen from these guys for a while. And then whose music should hit? But Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And the game.
Paul Levesque.
The game's music hit, and Triple H came out in his deadly attire of the leather jacket, t-shirt, and jeans, and taped
the
fists.
The biker dad.
The cerebral assassin.
Yes.
The king of kings.
The, yeah.
The game.
The gamer.
He's got many
the
more.
The King of Kings.
And I'm sure he's got many more nicknames. Yeah. The Shovel.
The Shovel.
He came out and Reigns ran after him and they brawled. And they beat each other up for a while.
Yep.
And Reigns clotheslined Triple H over the barricade, went to go after him some more, and Triple H hit him in the throat with a ring bell.
Yep.
Proceeded to punch Roman a lot, smash his face off of the announce table numerous times, busting him open, and then when that wasn't enough, punched him some more on the ground, just completely beat him up.
What a baby face.
Yeah, and getting cheered the entire time. He attacks the guy with a ring bell, beats him up like a savage heel, and gets cheered for it.
Yep.
And then he...
and he delivered, by the way, the worst suck it I have ever seen Triple H deliver.
Well, this is after he delivered a very vicious pedigree on the steel steps to finish off the beating. Just a savage, brutal beating. I could say the crowd was into it.
Oh, yeah.
But they were into the heel, the villain, who stole the title, technically, from the good guy, beating this good guy up and keeping, like, basically injuring him on storyline.
Yep.
And they loved it. Loved every second of it. Roman is just so over.
I can't wait for Roman to go for his third title.
His third WWE title. It should really be his second, but...
Technically, really, it is his second, but still. You know what I mean? It's like... Ugh. Awful. Just awful.
Unbelievable that this stuff goes on. Unreal. But, and now, for everybody who doesn't know, they are announcing on WWE.com that Roman had surgery on his nose, and me and Zach are under the belief that this is just a way to make sure that he doesn't show up to any of the Smart Mark cities and get booed on the way to WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's true.
Are you believe this 100%
work? Like 100%.
Definitely
the same reason why they put Sheamus, they gave the title belt to Sheamus, because they knew that people would boo Sheamus and they would cheer Reigns when he would finally take the belt off
him. Yeah. Unbelievable.
This company is just amazing.
So we're just going to take one last quick commercial break, and then we're going to do
the big reveal, the big announcement.
The big reveal for the interview, as well as answer the question of the week.
The money.
Here we go. Money talk.
That was a money transition.
Very, very. A lot of dollars there. My goodness. So yeah, that was Shane McMahon's theme song, the guy who made probably the most surprising return in the last, I want to say, well, probably 3 years.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have ever, I actually didn't expect him to come back ever, to be honest. So the question of the week, Zach, is...
Well, the question of the week... the question of the week comes from Simon Zimmerman.
Who's the... he's the question man.
Essentially, he just said... Did Shane O'Mac single-handedly save WrestleMania for this year?
I don't think he single-handedly saved it, but he built a lot more intrigue to the show than what would have been for it otherwise. And certainly he gave The Undertaker a much more viable opponent than Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
And I'll keep going on about that. And you're going to give a little update on the interview, aren't you, Zach?
Absolutely. We're just going to set things up. We did an interview today. I guess you could say a very interesting guy. He is a multiple-time world champion, and he's currently doing some pretty big things, I guess you could say. And, well, again, we'll just let this man do the talking.
That's enough slap nut. This is Jeff Jarrett, the King of the Mountain and founder of Global Force Wrestling. And you're listening to Wrestling with Ideas.
So yes, next week you will get to hear an interview with the one and only Jeff Jarrett of Global Force Wrestling, and all he has to entail includes some of his TNA career, his WCW career, and where he plans to go forward with this new promotion.
Yeah.
So see you all next week and enjoy that.
Thank you for tuning in to Wrestling with Ideas. We are the greatest wrestling show on the planet and air every Tuesday night at 9. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. That's at WrestlingWIdeas and Facebook.com/WrestlingWithIdeas. And also check out our previous episodes on Podomatic, which includes exclusive interviews with talents from across the wrestling world.